It is Saturday, August 20th, 2011. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is Public Radio KOSP. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today's theme is by Al Luckow. If you'd like to make a theme for Geek Speak, please feel free to do so. Send us a... We'd love to play it on air. You can learn about how to do that at geekspeak.org. In the second half of the show, we invite you to join the conversation via phone with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Mr. Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy and sometimes Stanford instructor. Good morning, Miles. Good morning, Ben.
Wait, who am I?
I don't know. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
And we also have for a at least part of the show, Mr. Wyatt Troxell, no relation. No relation to Ben. He's a relation of mine. Wyatt is an avid gamer and about to start fourth grade. Is that right, Wyatt?
Yes.
So we'll go ahead and start out with your story, Mr. Troxell. Tell me, what game have you been playing lately online and with your father?
Well, I've been playing Minecraft, which pretty much Minecraft is the only thing I've been playing pretty much all the week.
You love it?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you describe the Minecraft world?
Minecraft world is all about a world of bricks, and everything is a brick, and pretty much you have to build your world. You just start out normal, and then you go up and build your own city.
So, kind of like virtual Legos, maybe?
Is it Legos?
Yeah. Yeah, but blocks. No, like extra.
Cubes.
Yeah.
Perfect cubes. They're actually 1 meter by 1 meter cubes in this virtual reality.
So those are really
world.
Big.
Small, yeah, big, they are big, flat.
Yeah. And the different textures of the different cubes allows you to break into them and also change them, craft them into something.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of things can you make in this world?
You can make swords, armor, pretty much weapons and explosives and stuff like that.
And you cut down trees and get the wood from that, turn
and
that into...
And you can make stuff, and but before you make anything, you have to make a crafting table, which is just floor for,
Four pieces of board that you put in your crafting table. It's a very simple kind of creating engine, but it does allow you to make... There's probably, I don't know, maybe 200 different types of items in the world. And everything, you know, the physics functions well. Water's a little strange. Doesn't work the same way water works in our world. But the interesting space is that Wyatt spends a lot of time in it just creating castles and tree forts and places to be protected by the monsters that come out at night. So
there's different monsters. There's
now, Wyatt, do you recommend this to other 9-year-olds out there?
Well, if their parents allow it, yeah.
That's good. That's good. All right, Wyatt, thank you for joining us. If you feel like you want to participate in the discussion, please feel just free to do so. Thank you. Ben, your first story, sir.
Sure. So Apple has just released a patent application, 20110201213. Apparently, that's how many patents we have in the world.
That sounds like a Star Trek episode name, like 10111100.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I was thinking, like, is it just coincidence that the only numbers in that patent number are 0, 1, 2, and 3? Like, that's
yes.
Quadrary, is that the word for it? Binary, tertiary, and
four. I don't know.
Quaternary.
Quaternary,
I guess, would be the...
Yeah, yeah, anyway. So that kind of made me happy. But anyway, basically what they're saying is, okay, so you have an iPhone, right? Remember the first iPhone, and you could use their headphones, but you couldn't use other headphones because there was kind of that mass around the outer part, the part you grip of the headphones. When you
no,
plug
I
in
had a razor blade. I made my headphones.
I carved a lot of those headphones early on, yeah.
Yeah, so they kind of
so
had
the,
that
the
issue.
The connector we're talking about is the same as a headphone connector. It's called a 3.5
millimeter. TRS or TRRS.
Yeah.
If it has one...
What does TRS stand for?
tip ring sleeve. So it, if it has these the two black rings, that those are actually what separate out the different pieces of metal that are conductive.
An insulator.
Right? An insulator. Yes, mm-hmm. That's the word for it.
So a TRS, a normal headphones, has three of those.
Two of those.
No, two. Well, two little two. Black things. But
yeah,
actually
two
little
black things. Three connectors, and then it's kind of like if you slice a piece of bread, how many cuts do you make, you know, versus how many pieces you end up with. It's always one more. And then there's TRRS, which gives an extra channel for the microphone.
Tip, ring, sleeve.
Exactly. I don't know which ring is which.
It's funny, I'm about to do a two-week workshop on introduction to technology and art for work, mm-hmm. and this is the kind of stuff I'd cover.
So, yeah. So
exciting.
It's a headphone jack, you know?
Yeah.
But Apple, as you all know, I'm sure, has been making devices that are thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. So they're starting to get to the point. I mean, a long time ago, we got to the point where, like, you know, serial ports were way too big for the computers that we're making.
Now, switch to USB.
Yeah, it's absurd, though, because they are saying that they want to patent basically cutting a TRS or a TRRS plug, a headphone jack, in half.
And we don't mean half lengthwise, we mean half widthwise, like up the shaft kind of and split
yeah,
it that way.
Yeah,
like
laterally.
Like peeling a banana.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Kind of like slicing a banana and lengthwise.
What will this do for them?
Well, I mean, obviously it'll make the connector thinner, but I think the idea is that they kind of want to be able to say, oh, we're not changing anything. We're working with existing technology. Because so Apple and a lot of other companies have gotten a lot of flack over the years for changing plugs, which means you need to now go buy another adapter for this stupid thing, right?
So, but wait, there is, that's a three, the headphone jacks we're used to is actually a smaller size thing of a more standard size, which was a quarter inch. And these were used for phone patching, a very common connector. And also they're used a lot in audio. Yeah.
6.3 millimeter.
But they were quarter inch standard. And then when 3.5 millimeter, the smaller connector came out, it was a metric size.
So yeah, everyone calls inch them eighth inch, but they're not eighth inch. It bothers me.
But anyway, there is a 2.5 millimeter connector you see every once in a while for headphone connectors. For
you see them on
cell phones.
Really old phones.
The older stuff, yeah.
And for some newer projectors.
And some newer projectors.
Pocket projectors. A lot of times have those.
Oh, really? Yeah. They want to conserve, so they use that. But why?
And TI, why not TI calculators.
Rather than 3.5? I guess half of 3.5 is thinner than 2.5.
I think because they want to make their own standard jack, and then they can sell their own adapters. I mean, I don't know if that's actually the reason.
So
but
if you take a headphone jack, a normal headphone jack, or for your iPhone or whatever, you look at it, and you just cut this right down the center of it and remove half the material, that's what they're going to suggest? That is very much a different connector.
Like, there's the picture of it.
What?
You can find it on geekspeak.org.
Why not just make a better connector? Like something that's kind of like a USB kind of thing.
If any of our listeners are audio people, you know, or actually most people have had this experience. You unplug one of these cables from a big stereo system and it goes like that. Because exactly
that's
like
great.
That.
Great, yes.
Because, you know, as you unplug it, all of the different connectors, the three or four different connectors make contact with what they're not supposed to make contact with.
Right.
The very last thing to make contact is the ground, right? And so you end up with this bzzz
the
thing
sleeve.
When you...
The TRS sleeve, the sleeve is always the ground point.
The sleeve is the ground, right. Yeah. And so then you have other audio standards like XLR. That's used for stage microphones. And that's a much better system because when you plug it in, the first thing to connect is the ground.
So you're suggesting that they switch to XLR?
Yeah, XLRs are a lot bigger. They're much, much bigger.
It's bigger than your thumb.
I feel like, but of all the connectors... Really,
well, like USB, the micro USB type connector, which is basically the shell of the USB removed and just the slipping card, that's a pretty good thin thing. Basically, it'd also be cheaper to make. I mean, making TRS connectors is actually kind of complicated because the tip lead has to go through the ring and the ring and the sleeve and not connect. So you have this weird, this tubing effect.
It's interlocking.
But the thing I can't stand about them is they pop out all the time. Mm-hmm. In fact,
The MacBook that I have,
when I first got it, I kept on trying to do the show. I feed the theme song from it, and sometimes the Skype calls through it. I couldn't get the connector to stay in reliably. Mm-hmm. I was always bending it around because the connector just doesn't grab enough. And so I've switched to a USB type sound card.
You could
always
tape it on there.
Yeah, exactly. That's
which is just awkward. One of the other cool things about this, just briefly, with the 3.5 millimeter stereo connectors, is, and I'm sure some people have had this experience too, if you have it plugged in and it comes unplugged just a little bit and suddenly everything gets weird and echoey and you can't hear the vocals or the kick drum anymore, it's because one of the channels has connected to the ground and the other channel connected to the wrong channel. And so you get the effective, mathematically what you get is one channel subtracted from the other channel, which basically what that means in more colloquial terms is you take out everything that's the same between the left and the right.
Like the lead vocals?
Like the lead vocals. It's mixed dead center. So you hear it from kind of the center of the audio field, but in reality, it's just the same on the left and the right. And so if you unplug it just ever so slightly on devices that don't automatically switch to the external speaker, like, you know, Macs and stuff, you get this bizarre effect. And it's like a karaoke. And that's how karaoke machines work, actually. Same effect. But anyway, so I'm just annoyed that they're patenting
a new connector based on a really bad one.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, like, why don't they innovate?
It is a shame also that they don't work like how FM radio works. In other words, if you have less signal, you go to a mono.
Uh-huh.
And then if you add a little bit more signal, it's actually not, you aren't sent the left channel if it's a low signal and then sent the right channel if you have more. It's this mono signal and then the extra is like a subtractive value so that it can split out what
cool.
is left and right. It's very cool. But
yeah. But
not done.
Doesn't
by
make a lot of sense by connector types. But yeah, it's true.
Well, it means that you could have mono and stereo with the same cable and the same equipment.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
the by the way, the pinouts for the iPhone, the TRRS, is actually different. I think that the sleeve in the iPhone, the very bottom ring, is actually the mic, and the ground is the next one up.
Is it really?
I believe so. And the reason that has to do with is the standard always had a long ground shaft, and the way that the connector connects inside, there's like these little leaves basically that touch the shaft of the connector. And as that slides along, it connects to different points. When they wanted to add the ability to have a microphone built into a normal headphone jack, they didn't want to conflict with a normal pair of headphones. So in an iPhone, you can plug in, or an iPod, you can plug in a microphone-enabled headset cable like you normally have when you buy the unit, the white cables. Or you can plug in a normal one, and they both work the way that they'd expect to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they're doing the microphone detection is the microphone actually looks like a little capacitor in the line between those two points. So they can detect the capacitance between the ground and the bass sleeve. And with that know, oh, there's a microphone there, and it will use that and turn off the phone's microphone. So the phone has a microphone, it's two. So if you plug in headphones to a normal headphone to an iPhone, the microphone on the bottom still works. You can talk on it. If you plug in one that has a mic in it, a four connector cable, it will detect that mic and turn off the body mic. And it does it pretty slick. It's a pretty clean way to do it.
And, you know, on Android, a lot of the phones, like my Nexus One, came with a little thing with three buttons. And those buttons actually work by just sending a quick little down down one of them or something like that. And
I think that's how the volume controls and the mute control work on the iPhone. But I think there's actually more data being sent along.
I think
cable.
That's actually digital.
Yeah, I looked in the I've
because
looked
that,
in that
there's
before
a little chip,
they break
right?
all the time. There is a bit of circuitry in there.
With the Android one, I don't think there's a chip at all. Yeah, I think it's just like
dialing
it just connects
phone.
It really.
You know,
fast.
That's how dialing a radial phone
radio phone.
Worked. It was just connecting and it's different pulse rates.
Yeah,
you could dial just by tapping the.
In that movie, Hannibal Lecter dials from prison. They removed all of the all of the buttons, and so he actually just takes advantage of pulse dialing. He picks up the phone. And then there's a little button that gets pushed down to hang up the phone, and he just hits that
totally feasible. Yeah,
bah, 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 bah,
I've done it. It's really hard to dial a phone, especially if you have friends with nines and numbers. You just don't call those people anymore.
Yeah, but what are zeros?
You can't explain to younger people.
Well,
like
it's hard.
I really hate it when my friends have zeros in their phone number.
Why? Do you know the phones that actually have a rotating dial on them? Have you ever used one?
Yes.
Oh, you have.
I've used one before.
Where have you used it? Up at Boom Area?
I think so, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know this.
They're not a common thing, that's for sure.
Yeah. The other really quick thing that I want to say is I just wish, and maybe they are, but I just wish that these plugs would be backwards compatible. See, if they cut them exactly in half,
they're not backwards compatible.
They're not going to be backwards compatible. If they leave a little bit
Might be. It depends on the type connector plugging in.
It depends on how well it's built, how well
and then also how you slide it in. It's just a bad idea. They shouldn't have done it, and I'm ticked off. They probably won't. They'll probably do something else.
Dumb. Well, they just
have
a patent.
Let's go on. Speaking of something else, Mr. Miles Elam, hi, how's it going?
Hi, how's it going? I was going to talk about super cookies. Yeah. People have talked about
it. Is that like chocolate chip oatmeal raisin? Super cookie.
No, these are a bit less filling, though. The cookies that I'm referring to are the ones that are found in browsers. And many of us are familiar with them. We talked about them in the past, about ways for third-party marketers to track your movements on the net. But it's also a useful way of maintaining state to know, you know, from page to page, you know, that this is your shopping cart. This is the same user that has this information at your bank. They need cookies for that.
And it's kind of based around how the web works. Every connection online, a browser talking to a server, is an independent experience.
Right. It's referred as stateless. Yeah.
Right. So you ask for a page that lists all these different headphone jacks you want to buy. You pick one to buy. And the web server doesn't really know that you were just on the page that lists a whole bunch. The web server just knows that, oh, you want this one now. And so it's always this new transaction. And it's kind of a strange way of thinking about it from a program perspective before the web existed. And so cookies
And the reason why it came about is because if you maintain state, in other words, you had a persistent socket connection like previous protocols like FTP.
Like the two computers like communicate that together, now they're in a conversation like a telephone call.
Right. It doesn't scale as well.
It's really hard to do that.
It's scaling meaning, if you have one user, no problem. If you have 1,000 users, you start to see a difference. When you have a million users, it becomes a real issue with resources.
Yeah, it's a little bit like text messaging with friends rather than calling them. You can text message with three people kind of effectively. You can't have a conversation with three people on the telephone because one of them actually takes all of your experience, basically, and locks you in.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of request once and then request again kind of idea of the web, the way to connect that, if you want to have like a shopping cart that keeps filling up, you have to, the server that's communicating with you has to recognize, oh, you're the person that just added the other thing and wants to buy this, and you're also the person who wants to buy this. And the way they do that normally is they just take your customer ID or something like of that quim and say, hey, every time you talk to me, please give me that number back so I know who you are. That's what a cookie is.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a super cookie?
A super cookie is a manipulation of the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, HTTP, the protocol behind the World Wide Web, to track a person or uniquely identify a person, but not using a typical means. Like, it is a perversion of HTTP, if you will.
Okay.
For example, something that's been talked about for a while, technique, was using what's known as e-tags. E-tags are, you generate a number based upon a character sequence based upon a particular document in a particular moment in time.
Okay.
So
is this like a hash?
Yes.
Okay.
And so if you, and this is useful if you have, for example, a very large infrastructure with multiple servers, to be able to know that even though they're different servers, they're all talking to the same database, they all have the same information, they all have the same file store, and be able to say, if a person goes to hits one server in the cluster, that if they come back again and they hit another machine in the cluster and they say, has this file changed, that they'll all be in agreement. As opposed to if you use, there's another tag called last modified that is harder to synchronize between services.
So to be clear, if I visited your webpage and your webpage has beautiful pictures of the sunrise on it, and about an hour later, I go back to your webpage, my browser actually downloaded all that information and has it. And so it could ignore all of that and then ask for that page again to view it. Or it could say, hey, has this page changed? This is what I think it is. And there's two ways of doing that. One is to say, this is the date that I last got it. Has it changed since this date? That's one of them. And the other one is to kind of hash the entire page and send back that.
Hash the entire resource that you're getting. Not necessarily the entire page. It's oftentimes an image that's coming along with with the document.
So it's kind of like a unique identifier for an image.
A particular
or something
resource,
like that.
Yeah.
And so instead of saying, hey, this image has changed, you say, hey, the image I have has this unique identifier. And then you as a web server says, yeah, that's the most recent. Use that. Or you say, no, it's changed. Now it's a different picture, and here's the new one. So the way of responding is basically to reduce the amount of traffic that was on the internet.
Right. Without this,
I never heard of the e-tag before, and I'm a pretty, I mean, I have some experience in web development. Why haven't I heard about it?
Because
you stupid.
Because you've never read the HTTP spec.
Is it something that browsers are doing all the time?
Oh yeah. Yeah, this has been around for very, very long time.
So the web server's hashing every one of its resources?
No, not necessarily. And actually, there's been a big transition. We'll get to this in a little bit. Let me get to the meat of the story, which is that one thing that's not known to a lot of people, even though people have used the e-tag, like put in a unique identifier in there so that they, when a person comes in saying, hey, is this the same resource? The server goes like, yeah, that's the same resource. By the way, yeah, here, keep using this ID number.
So basically they switch the cookie over to a cache of the page and say this is a resource.
Well, no, the page they assume is just going to be the same. It's a static resource, mm-hmm. and they just change the ID for each person that's coming in to make sure that they keep that ID. It's
that's
a very common thing that people use with cookies to track their movements. So, and this is something that's really, you can't really block it.
Is the e-tag created by the client? And
created
the
by the server.
Oh,
it is
just
only
a
created
it's
by
just
the server.
A number that goes back with it.
Right. And an e-tag can, normally with cookies, you can have settings in the browser. It's a very common thing to block what's called third-party cookies.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you have a conversation with some retailer, let's call it Target.com, and they have some tracking information. I don't know if Target does. I'm just using them as an example. So they're going to load in some image from some third-party site.
Like an advertisement.
Right. And that's if that third-party is like trying to give from... Yeah, from some ad or whatever, tries to set a cookie, many browsers will actually deny it. Will actually say, no, it's a third-party cookie. I'm going to ignore that. It's someone trying to do that cross-site tracking.
Right.
If, however, they send an image and they're doing it by e-tag, there is no way that the browser can distinguish between an actual legitimate hash and a tracking information.
I always thought they did that with just a unique image that they add.
You can do it by query string as well.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of different ways of doing this.
The e-tag is just another tricky one.
Right. And it's actually one that's pretty silent.
Is this the super cookie? This idea that you can't really turn this cookie off?
Yes. This and last modified. Unbeknownst to most people, including myself when I was reading about this, was that the last modified, which is normally a date, last modified Sunday, August, whatever, these last modified tags are actually just a string. Oh. The client does not recognize it as a date because different platforms will interpret dates differently. What happens if you go to a server that's based in France?
Oh, wow. I always thought of it as a date, of course.
What happens if you go to...
So the basic idea of the date one is that the idea is for... The e-tag and the date is all about the client being able to cache stuff so it doesn't have to request it over and over again.
Right.
So to lower the
load on the server, and it lowers the bandwidth usage
for both
client and server.
So you could ask, sunset page, and if you wanted to track me, you could say, hey, the last modified date is Lyle's request. And so every time I ask for that page, I send that string, and you're like, oh, there's Lyle again. So it's not used as a date at all. It's just used to identify who I am.
Commonly used as a date, and that's the proper usage of it. But for practical reasons, we can't have it be
a
parsable date unless you put in... the ability to say this is what a date is and it can't ever deviate from
that.
And we have to cover every single language that it could possibly
be served
in.
You basically have to trust that the server is going to be able to use that date effectively to respond with, no, the page has changed or no, the page hasn't changed. And however the server decides to implement that, the client should just bounce that back. It just should shave that.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So you can't get... So basically, the only way to turn off the super cookies would be to turn off all caching on your browser. Just totally not allow it to
cut off... But the thing is, that's going to be horrible for a lot of reasons. Another thing you can do is say, don't have a persistent cache for your browser. But bear in mind, everything has a trade-off. That means that your web connection is going to be perceived as slower. You're going to be using more bandwidth, and it's going to take longer for you to get the stuff that you're looking for.
Right.
So there's not a really easy solution to this one.
Okay. Thank
you. So basically, there's no easy way to say...
Hey, listen to GeekSpeak. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. I'll give that phone number in just a second. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering commuters quiet drop-in office space with a 10 gigabit fiber internet connection at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Information is at cruise.io.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Mr. Wyatt Troxell.
Hello.
Mr. Miles Elam.
Good morning.
And Miles, I mean Ben Jaffe. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-555. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. I'll give you that contact information again in just a second. But first, we're going to do a geek bit. I believe you have one, Ben. We talked about one last night, and now I can't remember what it is.
Was it how much we're bad tricorders? We talked about a lot of things.
Yeah, it's a long story.
That's a geek bite. We should have a geek bit and a geek bite segment. Some days it can be a geek bit. We used to do geek bites recorded segments,
but we have none of yours. Okay, well, how about we do a riddle?
Oh yeah.
Wyatt, please get a little closer to the microphone and tell us the riddle.
Okay. So this is how the riddle goes. There's, which one should I do?
The barrel.
The barrel one.
So here's a riddle. You can see it by the naked eye and you put it inside a barrel. What is it?
And the barrel gets lighter. What can you see?
By the naked eye.
When you put in a barrel, it gets lighter. And we'll let that float for a second. If you have an answer to that, please feel free to call us. The number is 1-800-655-5877. Miles, you seem to always have a geek bit. No? I think maybe we'll move on.
Actually, I guess this is a short enough story that I could do as geek bit, especially because we have a show that is highlighting the younger members of our group. Geek community. We do a little bit.
Yeah, certainly me.
a 13-year-old has actually made a advance in solar photovoltaic technology.
Really?
A 13-year-old.
What did this 13-year-old do?
This 13-year-old, a seventh grader from New York, was looking at how does the sun get stuff? Well, how about we take a look at leaves? Because nature does things very well. Leaves are following a Fibonacci sequence. That's how they form. It's this tree-like structure that we're very familiar with. It happens all the time. Golden ratio is a artifact of this as well. And set up his solar cells in a leaf pattern using the Fibonacci sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a higher efficiency rate per collector. Especially because it didn't than a uniform flat panel array.
What?
So he was able to generate 20 to 50% more energy, although he had to use more cells in the area. But because they were arranged in such a way with the bending and the branching, it was able to work better because you also didn't have to track the sun with it.
Okay, that's awesome.
So nature rules, so and it's a great thing for people to recognize.
Did this 13-year-old actually go, wait a second, a leaf is doing this really efficiently. How can I emulate that? Is that kind of how it happened?
Because that
is a very clever
way. He was giving it a shot. I mean, that's how most people do stuff. That's how science works. Says, I wonder, this one works this way. I wonder what happens if I do this.
Yeah, that's great.
Huh, that's funny.
I have a geek
so,
bit.
So congratulations to Aiden Dwyer.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have a quick geek pick, but my problem is I don't know if I heard about it from GeekSpeak or not. So did we by chance talk about converting between kilometers and miles and the Fibonacci sequence?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I've heard this recently. I think we did.
Yes, we did it on the show.
Yep, we did. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Listen to our archives.
Previous shows. You'll hear all about it again. Phone number 1-800-655-5877. A little correction. Last night, I think I mentioned some movie. I don't know what it was about, but the movie that I wanted to mention was Pirates of Silicon Valley. It's Pirates of Silicon Valley. Not Giants,
last week.
I think is what I covered last week. Yeah, it's Pirates of Silicon Valley. I still haven't seen it, but I've read a lot about it because recently we launched Steve Wozniak's website, woz.org, and I was reading through a lot of people's comments about that movie. But in any case...
it's a great movie. I used to own it.
Yeah.
But I had it on VHS.
Oh, and you got,
I got rid of all of my VHS tapes.
I can still play a VHS tape, I think, maybe, if I get the tape cleaner out.
Well, not on an Apple computer. They're too big.
Can you play half a VHS?
Yeah, no. Apple has decided to cut the VHS players in half. Or the VHSs in half.
Okay, so
it's called VHSC.
We might get a little bit of a correction about connector types. From our station engineer, Brandt, he might join in. He just want to say that most XLRs are not grounded, which is an interesting...
meaning they don't have a third pin that's not connected?
Well, the XLR, the three pins, are not. There's not a ground. In
oh, sorry, yeah, okay. So I misspoke. Yeah, balanced I totally input. Misspoke. Yeah, they're balanced.
Yeah, well, I mean, that pin most likely is connected to the shield, but mm-hmm. it's not actually the ground.
Yeah.
But maybe Brandt will join us on air and fill some more.
It acts like the ground, right? It depends. If you're connecting to a microphone, it doesn't.
Ground in electronic terms means a very specific thing. It means an absolute pool of resource that can never vary in its electrical change.
And half the time that I've been dealing with XLR, I've been connecting a consumer electronics through crazy adapters.
Right, you're basically always grounding the XLR.
So I was using it as a ground.
Poorer sound quality. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, sometimes it's the only thing you can do.
But in any case, from Santa Cruz, Mike, T. Mike, welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, thank you.
What's up?
Well, I always listen to KUSP on my iTunes, on my Macintosh, and for some reason, it's not coming through. Every other radio station I click on gives me an immediate response, and when I click on our station here, nothing's happening. It's just doesn't show. So I'm wondering if the stream is up or what's up.
Well, I don't actually know right now if the stream is up. I'm sure, yes, Rick is right now listening to the stream. So the stream is up. Have you had this trouble before with KUSP?
Never.
No,
this is the first morning, and this is the only station. I'm wondering, is my iTunes censoring you guys? Can that happen? No,
it wouldn't be censoring.
Have you tried just quitting and reopening iTunes? Very, very, very occasionally media players get funky.
Really?
You have to...
I'll do that right now.
Yeah, you can give that a try. That probably is not the problem.
But well, I'll delay you. And,
just buying us time, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I did. I quit it, and I came back on, and it's still giving me nothing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Let's see. I probably have to reboot or something to really get it.
Let me see if it's playing on my computer.
Yeah,
it is.
It is.
Delay. Let me see if it's playing on my computer.
Ooh. Keep this that on for 10 seconds and we'll hear it looting.
It's extremely confusing.
Sorry, you getting it?
10 seconds and we'll hear it looting.
Confusing.
Okay, stop.
It's driving me nuts. Well, it does work for my computer and I'm using iTunes.
Okay, then something's going on here with this particular thing. I can't figure this out. Okay.
Thanks for the call. Good luck.
I'm glad I've got an MP3.
All right.
See you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
Yeah. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
That's like the tech support where you get that tech support person, you're like,
That's the IT crowd, actually. The IT crowd is, have you seen it?
No.
It's a fantastic, you would love it. It's a fantastic reality show, I think out of England, one of the things that the tech guy does, it's about two tech guys and a manager in a basement of a very, very large corporation with a skyscraper. And at one point, he records himself. His answering machine is, hello, IT, have you tried turning it off and on again? And if he hears someone say, oh, no, I'll try that, he doesn't bother to pick up the phone. But if someone says, oh, yeah, I tried that, then he picks up and he's like, okay, well, what's your problem?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, we laugh at that, but having work tech support, and anyone who's work tech support can attest to this, it sounds really annoying to tell someone, you know, just reboot.
Is it plugged in?
Right. Yeah. But you have to, and someone will tell you, I already rebooted, and it's amazing how many users will just flat out lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe they'll know that they should have, but they're embarrassed, or they just have decided in their head that it won't solve the problem.
I found myself in that same situation.
And like, you just have to sit on the air, and you just have to take the abuse and say, please, could you just try rebooting right now just for me? And
as a personal favor.
Yeah, seriously, 9 times out of 10. Oh, it's working now.
That's weird.
It just
needed the magical touch, right?
From Carmel Valley, Fred, have you tried rebooting?
I have not needed to reboot yet today.
Okay. What's your question?
Well, I had a question about the cookie discussion you were having. But first, the solar PV 13-year-old kid story just doesn't seem to make sense on the surface of it.
Okay.
If you add panels, you'll get more production. But how, by arraying them differently, can you?
Yeah, he's not using fewer panels. The panels are not increasing in efficiency by itself. It's.
Mm-hmm. My stab at this is that the angle of attack on a solar cell is extremely important. So if you have a slight curve, you have at least some cells that are always in perfect alignment.
Oh, so the panels themselves have an arc to them.
A leaf shape that's actually not just the design, like if you take a maple leaf and press it in a book, but the actual curve and structure of the leaf where it has a curving valley in the certain areas. That shape actually is more effective, I guess.
And effective over a longer period of time, especially over a flat, versus a flat panel that it doesn't have a tracker
on it. Of course, if you had a flat panel and you had a tracker, that was going to be more efficient.
Although the tracker t- takes power.
Right.
So
you have to figure out if the tracker's going to be really efficient. Yeah. Anything else, Fred?
Exactly. Okay. Well, yeah, about the cookie thing, but one last thing on that. I guess if it's the panel in essence becomes, 100 little panels rather than one big panel. So you're just kind of squeaking a little out of the difference between what you can do with 100 different panels versus one panel.
Technically, a photovoltaic panel is actually multiple panels, even though they're all arrayed together. So he's just putting them in a slightly different configuration.
It's actually always the case that the solar cell, the actual one little cell, is actually small, very, very small.
Right. So my thought is you're just eking out a little better than average on the big one, something like that. Anyway, so the cookie thing, it's been a little creepy. I've noticed lately on the internet that my Facebook comment bar pops up on all these random websites, newspapers, blogs, and it's kind of weird, but it relates to the cookie thing. So clearly there's some communication between whoever, the New York Times and Facebook, and me, my computer, to know to stick my little comment bar there.
That's right.
So then, taken to the logical extreme, is every website going to be talking to every other website, and is that a great thing, or is the whole internet going to crash?
Let's be clear that if you're talking about Facebook, especially Facebook, but just about any social media, any aggregation site, things like that, they have a very bad record with regard to privacy. For all intents and purposes, they don't care unless it's going to get them sued.
The way it's working with that little bar, though, is that you go to a website that has the little, Facebook like button or the Facebook who's commenting on these. And what's happening is they're including a little attachment of content that actually is served by Facebook. So when it gets served, when your browser sees that little, hey, go to Facebook and put this content here, it actually makes a separate request to Facebook. It hands off your cookie information. Facebook goes, oh, this user is Miles. Sends it back.
Usually if you're logged into Facebook at the time.
And the tricky thing about that, the whole way that works is really interesting, is the page you've actually visited doesn't know who you are. It's just including something that then knows who you are, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of dumb to
unless
that.
They're using Facebook Connect, which actually does allow them to pull information on the back end. That's not always
but
true.
But most of them aren't.
Right, but it doesn't have to be that way. But what's happening potentially, the Facebook Connect thing is that the web server says, include this, puts a unique identifier on it, goes to Facebook and says, hey, I just sent you a customer with this unique identifier. Who was that? And the loop is made. And Facebook likes this because it connects their power more and spreads them like a virus across the internet. And all these social
not that we're biased or anything.
But at the same time, it sure is cool and awesome if you go to a website and you found out that, your mom just commented about it. Isn't that a neat thing to know?
Yeah.
For communication purposes, it's wonderful. For what
privacy.
We're used to with personal privacy, the rules are changing and people need to shift their expectations.
Keep in mind, if you want to be private, it's not that hard to be private online. You basically get your browser, you turn off. I mean, the simple ways of doing it to not let Facebook track you is to turn off your cookies, turn off your cache, disable all these features that make the internet fun and shiny for you, and now it's going to be slow and clunky.
Well, disabling your cookies will prevent you from actually using the internet. What you can do is say that there are settings in the browser where you can say all cookies are session-based. In other words, delete all cookies when you close the browser and delete the cache when you close the browser. And then you're starting off with a whole new
In mind that your ISP gives you a Nika number whenever you connect, and they know who you are from that number. And it's not that hard to find that out. So that's how lots of times if you go to a website you've never been to and everything, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, you're in Santa Cruz. Oh, Santa Cruz is awesome. They're like, how do you know that? It's because the IP block is given to AT&T, and AT&T gives that IP block to its customers.
It's the same thing as looking up an area code list or a phone prefix code.
Right.
That narrows it down even further.
The way you can disable that ability is you can actually hide your IP address through this network called
Tor
network. And you can look this up at what is that, the plugins for this?
Well, actually, this thing called the Tor browser.
The Tor browser is what you probably want to get, yeah. It's basically a Firefox install that wraps everything in a secretive place. And you can...
And uses proxy servers as an anonymizer.
It's really quite good. You basically probably won't get tracked down. And
You're really, really worried about it, you can use that.
Yes. But the thing is, it's getting so easy now to track people online that... It's almost like that should be used all the time. That should be your default state. Now, I know I might sound a little paranoid, but I could get into that topic for a long time. That this idea that because it gets extremely simple to track people, maybe you have to always be simply adding more privacy.
And then you have to add in the complexity of HTTPS and the complexity to do that with Tor. So to sum up, and I'm really sorry to say this, but this is such a complex topic that the people who are working in it don't have a clear solution for it. So the hope for the typical user to be able to solve the problem rather than just mitigate yeah. some of the issues with it is slim to none.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the Tor browser is a good way to go.
I'm not too paranoid about it all.
Good. Me neither.
So to sum it up, is this something that's going to spread? Can every company suddenly do this?
No.
Or is there something you need to
It's about the relationships.
Google?
It's about the relationships of the systems, right? So the page you're visiting that has the Facebook, your friends are commenting on this, they've decided to start enabling and using Facebook. You go log out of Facebook and that won't happen anymore. Or, you know, mm-hmm. use one browser for Facebook and use everything else in a different browser. You won't be connected.
Or being vocal about it and becoming involved.
Yes.
This is something that Microsoft used to use on MSN was that hack. And it became public and people complained. And so Microsoft backed down and stopped doing it.
Yeah.
So and that's one way of doing it. But there's so many sites out there. You really have to pick your battles.
Yeah. I've seen some really interesting kind of art pieces where you obfuscate who you are by swapping randomly with other people. So the e-tag thing, you know, if it's the same resource, you just have a plugin to Firefox and all of a sudden I start using one of 50 different e-tags and totally mess up their system. The idea of kind of attacking with the technology itself. But that, again, is for geekiness, not for everyday use.
That's pretty passive-aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's bad in that context.
Can you be passive-aggressive against a corporation?
Seems like that actually doesn't seem passive-aggressive. That seems fairly active, actually.
Active-aggressive.
Active form of programming.
Oh, yeah. That's, but from their perspective, it's passive.
Fred, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. From Santa Cruz, Ken, welcome to Geek Speak. Ken, hello.
Hello, how you doing?
Quite well. What's your question?
Well, I'm looking at starting I have a mountain community that's looking to have satellite internet hooked up to them, and I know that the Cat5 cable can only go about 100 yards before you start, losing data. And I was wondering, what cable can I use for a long distance?
How long?
Well, some places as far as probably about 1,000 meters.
1,000 meters. A kilometer? Do you have line of sight between them?
No, it's a mountain community with a lot of, redwood trees and everything.
Well, with that distance, you can go with optics. You can go with fiber optics. It's expensive.
Okay.
Yes. It's expensive. That's quite pricey.
It's not extremely expensive. It's probably not that bad. But one other thing to do is you can actually put switches or hubs in place, kind of like repeater points, and you have to have power along the way, though. Sometimes you...
Done. The power thing is no problem.
Every 100 meters, then you could do it, right? You just get like a $20 switch. You plug it in. You plug both connectors in. You want it to be a dummy switch, right, that just kind of repeats the traffic, doesn't actually manage anything. You could do that. Now, those spaces might have to be, dealt with in a environment, weather-wise.
Yeah, and you're talking about going through the mountains, which means you have weather issues to deal with.
Miles
as well.
And I used to live on the same property, and we had a connection between the houses, and we had a hop, but we used wireless. Even though we probably had the distance, we could have done cable. It's just
it was pretty long for
it was. It was
we could have done a repeater. We could have done like cable,
and that system's still working out pretty well. And the person at the other end of it, two hops away from my house, is able to download videos from my server and stuff in real time, no problem. So it's kind of neat to be able to do that. But I think wireless is the way to go. If you're really interested in this kind of stuff, Got.net kind of handles this stuff for people. The guy that owns Got.net, I'm blanking on his name, and he's actually kind of a friend of mine. I'm sorry.
And Crusoe also does satellite.
It's not a satellite, but it is
wireless.
Wireless,
For people who can't get
it. Crusoe did purchase a company that does this. So there's two ISPs in the area that know the kind of problems that you might be by having in Santa Cruz. I'd talk with them.
At 1,000 meters, what kind of wireless are we talking? Like microwave communications?
Microwave just is a certain frequency. You can get standard off-the-shelf Wi-Fi gear that will go that far easy. A couple hundred dollars, so $100 for both ends, and you'd have a connection like that.
But Wi-Fi is microwave.
When you say it's microwave.
It's just really low output.
In fact, that's why, when you say microwave, normally people think about
microwave oven, which is going,
which is a certain frequency, and they do interfere with sometimes with Wi-Fi because they're the same frequency. But the newer Wi-Fi doesn't use that frequency. We won't get into all that, though, I don't think. But yes, we're talking about microwave. And the thing, the specific thing is, to do really stable, good quality antenna point-to-point stuff, you kind of want to get licensed spectrum so that you know you're dedicated. But that's really expensive, and you have to get a license. And we're talking tens of thousands of dollars to do this. But the off-the-shelf stuff is getting really quite good. And I'm trying to think of the product that I recommend, and I can't think of the name of it, but if you email me, I will look it up. So just go to geekspeak.org and ask for good Wi-Fi gear, and I'll give you my thoughts on that. Thank you, Ken, for calling.
I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Well, I think we got time for another story.
Ben? Yeah, cool. Yeah. So at the University of California, San Diego, which is where I grew up, they presented a paper, which I think I'm really happy scientists are starting to label their papers really in interesting way. Heat of the moment, characterizing the efficiency of thermal camera-based attacks. So a couple episodes ago, we were talking about credit cards and PIN numbers and things like that. And, you know, it's pretty easy to just point a camera kind of inconspicuously at a credit card reader and see what they're typing in and everything, right? Well, this technology, which according to them, they haven't seen it used in the wild yet. But basically, you point a thermal camera at the keypad of a bank ATM machine, right? ATM, not ATM machine. And you can actually see what buttons they've pushed, right?
After
they pushed it. Because basically what happens
not
is...
Not before?
They can tell the future. Wait a second. We could use that to
So, meaning that even if you block it, the buttons you pressed are kind of reddened, and you can see which one.
So, like, you know, you open your garage door at your house with a keypad, or you type in your PIN at a bank, and you move your body closer to the keypad so people can't see you pushing the buttons, right? But
then you
when you
away.
Push the buttons, you leave a little bit of heat on the button.
A little bit of what, Ben?
Heat. Oh, yeah. Okay, geek bit. That's the geek bit. Back in the day, they used to think of heat as a liquid, as a fluid. Before they knew that it radiated, that it was just EM radiation, just like light, right? Which is kind of a mind trip. And they called it phlogiston. So now I'm calling everything phlogiston, you know? So anyway, you leave a little bit of phlogiston or heat on the keypads. And then if you point a thermal camera at that, after the person kind of stands back, you can actually figure out what keys they've pressed and in what order they've pressed
them. Okay, so the trick to defeat this, if you're really paranoid, is you do your PIN, and then you put your hand over the keypad.
Yeah,
while
you just
you're
touch all
the
buttons.
Or you wear gloves.
Yeah. Or you just have
thick gloves.
Or you just get Vader to cut off one of your hands, get a robotic hand.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens, right? But the really crazy thing is, they have some really good results. Like, however many seconds after their system, or through one of these number of methods, can detect, let's say, 40 seconds after they push the button, assuming they don't push any other buttons on the keypad, which is very often the case, they can get like a 50 or 60% success rate on all the buttons in the order that they've been pushed. It's even better than if they have someone kind of standing nearby and watching the person type in the PIN, and then the person from watching guesses what they pushed.
Yeah, it's hard to do that.
Yeah, and this system
We're actually not very good at data collection, us humans.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night.
All right, let's go ahead and take a call from Aromas. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, is this Pat?
Yes.
Hi. What's your question?
Right now, I have AT&T for my internet and my landline and Verizon for my cell phone. I live in Aromas. Verizon doesn't provide internet service out there.
Mm-hmm.
People keep saying there must be ways for me to save money, and I'm wondering if you guys have any good ideas.
You want a cell phone, but you also want high speed or on internet connection.
Exactly right.
Get a different cell phone provider?
Yeah, but she's in Aromas, so Verizon's kind of her
only bet. No,
exactly.
We don't have a cheap way of doing that. What you can do is you might be able to get one of these point-to-point. I mean, basically, can you get DSL or cable?
I think that there's cable out there.
Yeah, cable. So the way I would probably do it from your location is to go ahead and get cable internet.
Yeah, I think it's Charter out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck. It's not going to be cheap, though.
Thank you very much.
So cool.
I love the Fibonacci story. That was great.
Cool. I like it, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Miles, what's your name? Wyatt, you're my son. That's right, Wyatt. The riddle earlier again. What do you put in a barrel?
Say it again.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you put in the barrel? You can see by the naked eye that makes the barrel lighter.
Okay, and I'm going to answer that at the very end of the show. So if you don't want to hear that answer to that riddle, that Byron Perntucky, I think that's his online handle.
Name?
Yeah, mentioned, it gave the answer to that. So if you don't want to hear it, don't listen to the very end of the show. But let me just let you know that Geek Speak on KRSP is supported by Monterey County Atheists, a secular community group. Next monthly meeting is Tuesday, August 23rd, 7 p.m. at Mountain Mike's Pizza in Marina. Monterey County Atheists, online at meetup.com/MCAtheists. Monterey County Atheists, promoting secular values. Friends of County Animal Services sponsors Placing Animals with Seniors, a nonprofit program that matches pets from Monterey County Animal Services shelters with seniors age 60 and older. Information is available at 769-8850. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers, and business tech specializing in protecting data, and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me was Ben Jaffe.
Yes, indeed.
And Miles Elam.
Good afternoon, or morning. Still morning.
But it's the end of the show. And Wyatt Troxell. Now, Wyatt, we did get this answer from Byron. What do you put in a barrel that makes the barrel lighter?
The answer is a hole.
A hole.
A hole, because if you have air in it, you have to let the air out and let air get in and makes it lighter.
I think the hole itself makes the barrel lighter, right? Because you remove that material.
But where do you put it, that is?
I think you
top,
put it in your
the
pocket.
The side?
No, you put it in your pocket. Well, the hole can go anywhere.
There's a great Winnie
the... Any wine that spills
you could
out.
Use, you could use a bazooka to put a hole in them. You can really get lighter.
There's Winnie...
Like, where do you put it?
Winnie the Pooh?
There's a great Winnie the Pooh episode where the gopher was combing the forest for his lost... The guy who... all of his S's were always... You
oh,
know?
Really?
Yeah, him.
I'm just not on top of it.
Well, yeah, exactly, like that. I can't do that. But yeah, he was combing the forest for his lost hole. He had a hole that he had dug, and then he lost it. It flew away in the breeze.
Feels like we've gone down a little bit of a rabbit hole.
A bit.
How did the hole fly away? It's just a hole.
Yeah, there's a good point.
That's a very good point.
Hey, why do spelunkers go into caves? Because it's not there.
Oh.
Geek Speak on KOSP. We're here every week. Coming up next, of course, is Car Talk with Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Thanks for listening. Remember, Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and is used with permission. Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor. Share and share alike. If you'd like to participate in the show, please feel free to do so. If you'd like to do something with our content, go ahead. You can make money off it if you want. At least somebody would. If you'd like to ask us questions during the week, of course, all the stuff we've talked about during the show and our emails and such is up at geekspeak.org. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air again was Wyatt, Miles, and Ben. We'll see you next week. Stay tuned for Car Talk.